Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Alondis, and this is the first edition of Living Power Life Radio. This is June 11, 2012, and this radio show is part of a whole package. I have a blog, and we will be discussing things in more detail that I raise in my blog. Not everything, but some things. And I'm coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. If it's lunchtime where you are, just consider this your power lunch. You're going to get fortified for the rest of the day. And another thing, this is reality radio. This is what I call reality radio. There's no 30-second delay. So whatever you hear is coming at you live. And in color, you might hear anything. Life is all around me. There's no one here to screen my calls. If you want to call in, it's 877-455-4988. And that's a toll-free number. And you can talk to me. But I want to focus on exploring the details of my welcome on my blog. The blog is livingpowerlife.blogspot.com. That's where you can find me. And you can also go to my website, DeborahELake.com. It's still there. And we're updating that to include my blog as well. But I want to start by saying that sticking with Americans, we're fat. We're unhealthy for the most part. That doesn't mean every American is fat, so don't go off on a bandwagon. But there's no secret that Americans tend to be overweight. Different parts of the country, you find more than others. But in general, that's the case. We eat the wrong food, we drink the wrong drinks, and we drink too much of and eat too much of the wrong thing. And that shows on our bodies. You can see it on your body. You can pretend like you don't see it, but that doesn't mean it's not there. The first time I consciously realized this, I was lived in Chicago for about maybe 12 years, and that's the first time I consciously was slapped in the face with the fact that we Americans tend to be overweight. I'm not picking on Chicago, I'm just saying that's the first place I consciously realized it. I ran into so many people who were not just fat, they were obese. There's an image that's in my head still to this day of an obese police person, man, trying to get out of his car, his squad car. And he was having trouble because of his size, and that stuck in my head. And I lived there for 12 years, and I became like I was where I was living, fat. I had problems, physical problems that come with being overweight and living and eating in ways that are not healthy and don't bring life into your body. So I'm talking about myself as well. And we're also unhappy. We tend to be unhappy. And there are different reasons that we give to why we don't feel happy, and there's a litany of salves and drinks and lifestyles and you name it, clothing, shoes, all kinds of stuff that promise happiness to us, cars, to us, life. You know, if you live in this neighborhood, you'll be happy. If you have this person, you'll be happy. But the fact is, we are not happy, and we're not very nice to ourselves or each other for the most part. And part of the reason deep down that we're unhappy is because we're taught to hate. We hate our bodies. We hate We hate how we look. Some of us hate our hair. Some of us hate our feet. Some of us look at our hands and say, ooh. Some of us look at our skin tone and say, ah. We're taught to hate ourselves. And that's what's making us unhappy. And we've also been conditioned, like I said, to ignore our inner truth, not even try to get in touch with it and look for happiness outside in an organization, in a group. If I just belonged to this particular group, I would be happy. If I just belonged to this, or if I just had that, or if this person would pay attention to me, or if I had that type of partner, I would be happy. We try to fill the void that comes, that feeling of unhappiness, that feeling of emptiness, that feeling of something's just not right. We try to fill that void with other people, obsessions with actors, or anger over politics, or adherence to a particular religious dogma to the point that you're blind, or just anything to distract, anything that we can grab onto. And we think that fitting in, that could be an obsession. That was with me. I was desperately looking for a place where I could fit in. I just wanted to fit in and belong somewhere. That would make me happy. And I think a lot of us are the same way. If we could just fit into a group or get a church or get an organization to recognize us, we would be happy. But that's not where happiness comes from, and that's not where health comes from. It doesn't come from outside. It comes from within, and that's hard. That is the hard thing. We have to learn how to connect with ourselves, respect what's there, and work to make what's there better. And it's called self-knowledge and love and responsibility. That's where you find happiness. So I realized about 3 years ago, I was still living in Chicago and training to run in my first marathon. And as I trained, and this was over the course of several months, this is not easy. It's not quick. It's not a quick fix. Over the course of several months while I was training, I realized that I had come to hate, I had begun to hate who I was. And because of that, I had surrounded myself with people who reinforced how I felt about myself at the time. They reinforced that anger and hatred toward myself. I had surrounded myself with people like that. And it took 3 years, almost, to bring me to where I am right now, which is realizing that to be healthy requires attention to mind, attention to body, and attention to your spirit as well. And that attention has to come from you, not through someone else. So my process changed me in ways that physically show. They show those ways. Just like when I was changed into someone who just was miserable, it showed on me, on my body. The same thing is true as I'm moving in the opposite direction and have moved into the opposite direction. It shows. And my goal is to help people through their process. Not give anything. I can't give this, but I can help people work to get it in their own lives. If you're tired of carrying the mental and physical and spiritual baggage that we all have. It's individual baggage. Your baggage might be brown. Mine might be green. Your baggage might have a pair of tennis shoes in it. My baggage might have a pair of cowboy boots. I'm just using little different words for imagery, not saying that there's anything wrong with either. We have baggage, and if you're tired of that, keeping you from your peace and from your true happiness, this is where you can work and find the guidance to do that. So when I talk about power, I specifically used that word, power, because we all have that power. We were born with it. It's who we are. And a lot of times people in our developmental stages of growing up see that power and want to squash it. A lot of times that happens. You can see sometimes people see a spark in a kid and they want to, for whatever reason, shape it or contain it or sometimes even own it. And that's the power I'm talking about. It's not power over anyone else. It's power that was given to you by God. That's the power. It's the power that will bring miracles into your life. It's the power that will attract people to you based on what you use it for. So power life, living power life, means that you are living your power in your life. You're living your power in your life. And that means that you are taking control of who you are right now, good, bad, and indifferent. And when I started, I didn't like much of what I saw. I really didn't like much of what I saw. I had become someone that even my daughters had trouble recognizing me. They said, "Mom, that's not you." Yeah, no, that's not you. So wherever you are, you have to accept that, because if you're trying to run from what you don't like, that's not claiming your power, because claiming your power means that you look at who you are right in this moment. And one of the ways, I've said before, one of the ways that you can really get insight into yourself is to look at the people who are around you. As I started to come back to myself, I realized that I was around people who found, for instance, humor. They found humor in degradation. They found that funny. The term dark humor kind of thing, making fun of other people, even if it's yourself, that kind of humor that undermines the humanity of another person. Those were the kind of people that I had been, that I had surrounded myself with, and that's where I was at that moment. I'm using that as an example. You can look at your closest relationships, the people that you have in your life, not I'm talking about adults, the people that you have in your life, look at those relationships. Look at, not judgingly, just look and see how they are. How are you when you're with them? What kind of behavior do you engage in? Is it loving? Is it respectful? Is it, and I know I throw out these words and people, your eyes roll over, but we really need to reclaim our lives, and part of that is reclaiming the language. And trust me, we don't have the respect that we had even 10 years ago for ourselves or for one another. And I can go down the list of examples, and I'm sure you can find some too, where new generations are being brought up, and they're not being taught the same respect that you were taught at whatever age you are right now. I would bet money that that's not the case, because I see it all the time. You see generations of kids, and they have less and less respect for themselves and for others. So that is what I'm talking about, getting that respect. Do you behave respectfully when you're around your closest people, what some people call your people? How do you feel inside? How do you feel about yourself when you engage in that relationship, whatever it is? I can give you another example. One of my closest relationships at the time, when I engaged, I always felt off balance. Is one way that I would feel, or questioning my worth, my value, my importance. That's what I would be left with. I would question my very value on this planet. That's big. And I think that's happening to a lot of us. And those are the relationships that tell you about yourself. And I don't want to encourage anyone. I'm not encouraging anyone to go off and say, oh, you know, blame other people. I'm saying this is insight into who you are. And I'll use myself as an example again. That relationship that I just described, that told me that I didn't value myself. And that relationship was a mirror for that. And that was a place where I could start to figure out why I got to that point. What is this mirror telling me? That's how you can do with the relationship. You look in the mirror to see if you have a stray hair growing out somewhere, or if you're a guy, you need a shave, you look in the mirror, right? Your relationships that you value, that you spend your time and your energy and your life force trying to hold on to, tell you about you. They're your mirrors. Not the ones with your children. I'm talking about adults. I have to keep reminding you and putting it out there that I'm talking about adults. Adults to adults. Because children are a different category, and that is not what I'm talking about. So start with looking at your relationships and figuring out what they say about you. That will start you down your road, and you may be very surprised about some things that you learn about who you are at that moment. Right now, today, because that's the only way you can change. You can listen to other people who will tell you that if you just eat this particular food, you'll lose your belly fat. Or if you run this course and do this monster workout, you'll be fit for life. It doesn't work that way, because if what is inside is not matching what you want to have on the outside, what is inside is going to be outside. They match. In other words, those two things match. And you have to do it simultaneously. Work on yourself. Get as much insight into yourself as you can by looking around. Raise your head up and look around. It might be hard, and you might feel like you just can't deal with another thing. But believe me, you will be very, very, very happy that you did. You will be very glad that you took the energy to look around and see what's around you, what's close, what energy have you got in your life? What does it say about you? Now, on my blog, I have information about meditating. This is something that you can use during meditation. One of the things that you do is, I started meditating, a long time ago. Let's just say that. And I started out of frustration. I did not like the way I felt. And I was just afraid and sad and all of the stuff that comes with it. And I started meditating, just reading about it and finding out about it and then practicing it. And I developed this discipline that I share on my blog. I developed it over years, over what worked and what didn't work and things like that. And I offer it to you as a place to start, not the end-all, exactly do this recipe, but it is a place to start, because one of the things that I encourage people to do is to have a base until you can get your own base. And in meditation, you can use my technique as a base until you tweak it and find out what works for you, because we are all different. Find out what works for you and what doesn't work for you, that kind of thing. And what is not something that's working, and what is something that you would like to include instead. One of the things, there's just a couple of things that I would caution you to do, to adhere to. And one is, try not to turn meditation into a distraction, because we're very good at distracting ourselves from painful or difficult situations. And that's a good thing. That's a way that we take care of ourselves. But in meditation, you don't want to use that as a distraction. In other words, put on music and get all involved in the preparation. Have to have the right candle, have to have the right bell and whistle, and you have to have the right incense, or you have to have a litany of meditation music that you can pick from based on your mood. No, that's you, that's me, that's everyone getting ready to meditate and using meditation, getting ready to meditate as a diversion from the hard work. What you do is sit in a comfortable chair where you feel safe and where you will not be distracted for 10, 15 minutes. It's not long. If you're not used to meditating, especially, don't say, I'm going to meditate every day for an hour. No. 10, 15 minutes set aside on a regular basis. If you can't do it every day, do it as often as you can. I recommend at least once a week in order to get any kind of benefit from it. But if you can't, that's okay. Don't turn meditation into a distraction by saying, I can't do it once a week, so what am I going to do? That kind of thing. I've done it. I know. So that's why I keep saying it. I've used distractions to keep from doing things that I didn't want to do. But so don't use it as a distraction. Do find a comfortable place that you use on a regular basis that is your place to meditate. If it's in your bedroom, wherever it is, feel safe, right? And forget about the incense and the lights and the candles and the this and the that, and concentrate on what happens when there are no distractions to speak of. What happens when the television is off, the computer is off, the radio is off, your phone is off? Turn all of that off, and you're with yourself. Think about what happens. Feel what happens. If that's scary, that's okay. It was very scary to me. I had no clue what would happen because I had filled my life with so many distractions that I didn't know what I couldn't imagine sitting quietly and waiting. Just waiting for what comes up. The other thing that I would have you really caution you to do, not to do or do, do not try to focus your mind. That's another way of using meditation as a distraction. You're so busy focusing on a spot on the wall or a candlelight. That's what you're doing. You're not meditating per se. And this is beginning. This is the beginning thing. Listen to what comes up and don't try to censor it. Don't try to silence it. Whatever's in your mind, you might find that your mind is racing a mile a minute and you're hopping from one thought to another, or one emotion to another, or one scenario to another. That's okay. That's part of your process. And it's what you need to do to be able to quiet down. Because ultimately, if you continue over the time, and this is a lifelong thing, if you continue, and within months, you'll be able to sit quietly and your mind won't be racing like it might start the first time, first week. You'll be able to sit and wait and think about what comes up. And when that's happening, one of the things, for instance, if your mind is jumping from one thing to another, try to have a notebook around and don't write it right at that time, but try to keep a mental note of the things that were most attached to an emotion. If, for instance, if a person's face comes up and you have a strong emotion there, try to keep that in the back of your mind while you're doing this. And the other thing is relax. That's why I say you need a place where you feel safe. If it's just a corner in the house, you need a place where you feel safe, because you'll see when you read, if you haven't already, the part on meditation, part of what you're doing is focusing on, you start out focusing on your body and feeling the tension, where you hold tension. Some of us hold tension in our shoulders. I'm one of them. And some of us hold tension in our heads, our midsection. Some of us, we hold tension at different places. And when you're paying attention to the muscles and relaxing them, helps you find and realize where you hold where you're holding that tension. For right now, that's what we'll call it, tension. So I am running a little out of time, so I'm going to wrap up, tell you to go to the blog, start with meditating, think about the people I'm summarizing, think about the people who are around you, and think about what the relationships show you in your mirror, your relationship mirror, and read my journal, have notes, and we'll talk a little bit more about dreams. We haven't talked about it in this segment, but we'll talk about dreams because meditating and dreams kind of go together. You'll find, if you don't remember your dreams, you might find that you do start remembering your dreams. If you do, they might become more vivid or more focused. So you'll need a dream log. You'll need a notepad for jotting down notes about your meditation. And we will continue on to health together. We can do this. And know you can email me anytime. Visit my website, we're updating it. You know, it won't have anything right now, but give us a couple of days. And from my power to yours, until next time, goodbye.